In marriage, nothing is as easy as talking, and yet there's nothing as difficult as communicating.
This is Real Family Life with Dennis Rainey, co-author of the devotional book for couples, Moments with You. It's Wednesday, June 18th.
In any given day, you'll often find me on my cell phone, just my wife and I trying to get our schedules together. And it helps us in our marriage to make sure that we're really communicating. Oh, pardon me, that's my cell phone. That's probably her now. Oh. Hello.
In this high-tech age of cell phones and instant messaging, our communications are more frequent but highly superficial. Did you know that the typical couple spends only 4 minutes a day in any kind of meaningful conversation with their spouse? That's less than 1/3 of 1% of a 24-hour day. If you want to be a romantic husband or wife, then become a great friend to your spouse. In our book, Rekindling the Romance, Barbara and I point out that romance is like a friendship that has been set on fire. To ignite the passionate fires in your marriage, the fine art of conversation is essential. One final thought. Never underestimate the power of words spoken face-to-face. Heart to heart. Guys, it's the way to touch our wives deeply. I'm Dennis Rainey, and that's Real, Romantic, Communicative Family Life.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called Prayer Works.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find Prayer Works at myfaithradio.com.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
And good morning. So nice to have you join us here on this weekend, and we appreciate you making Faith Radio part of your day. We have a great program lined up for you today. We're going to be talking to a friend of mine who is a radio personality, an inventor, and an author, has a fascinating background, and has written a great book that you can use to strengthen your faith, maybe even use in your small group or your Bible study, called Life in the Purple Wedge. How's that for an intriguing title? Van Harden is going to be joining us in just a few minutes here on Faith Radio, so stick with us. Our phone number, 800-893-93-FAITH. We'd love to hear from you, and you can call us anytime during this hour. In fact, if you do, we'll take down your contact info, and we'll put you into a drawing for a copy of one of Van's books, Life in the Purple Wedge, and I promise it will encourage you, and you'll find it in a book that'll really maybe get you back on the right track as far as your Christian life. So, again, call us, 800-893-93-FAITH, and we'll put you down for a copy of one of those books in our drawing. Well, you know, every week I jump into some of the research on families and culture and Christian worldview, and I found something interesting that I thought parents would like to know this week. You know, moms and dads used to warn kids that caffeine would stunt their growth. Well, these days, they are more likely to take them out for Frappuccinos. Yes? I'm not kidding you. Today.com writer Linda Carroll had this great story this week on new research into the effect of coffee and caffeinated drinks on kids. It turns out that even low doses of caffeine had an effect on kids' blood pressure and on their heart rates. Interestingly, researchers found that after kids went through puberty, caffeine had an even more powerful effect on boys than on girls. They're not sure exactly why, but after puberty, boys really are impacted by especially the cardiovascular effects of caffeine. That's one of the things that has doctors most concerned. And in fact, some of them are advising that kids should not have caffeinated drinks until their late teens. Dr. Kevin Shannon, who's with UCLA, says there are lots of things we can't do because we're not old enough or mature enough. Caffeine should probably be added to that list. Now, the study showed that low doses of caffeine slowed the kids' heart rate and increased their blood pressure. Now, you might not expect your heart rate to slow down when you drink caffeine, but here's the deal. It sounds like it's the opposite of what you'd expect, but at low doses of caffeine, the heart actually slows down to compensate for our rising blood pressure. But at higher doses of caffeine, the heart actually speeds up. And what has doctors particularly worried is the popularity of energy drinks, which, as you know, often contain very high levels of caffeine. And at high doses, caffeine can bump your blood pressure into the danger zone and spark life-threatening heart arrhythmias. Ooh, boy. Can also trigger neurologic symptoms, including seizures. So the best advice for you, Mom and Dad, is keep that caffeine away from your kids. I was in church last week, and I saw this. She must have been maybe 8-year-old girl. I was getting some coffee at the little coffee stand, and she's making herself a coffee right there, putting her cream and sugar in, a little extra sugar for her. She's 8, and then walks right over to Mom and Dad, and they're drinking their coffee, and she's drinking it right along with them. You know what? I think parents need to get a little more serious about this. And instead of cappuccinos or a can of Rockstar, what about, I don't know, water or milk or juice? That's what we used to drink when I was a kid. I'm really flabbergasted by this. And I see kids in Starbucks all the time having frappuccinos or some kind of mocha drink. So pay attention, parents. This is something that should be a wake-up call for all of us. Well, I do receive emails here at Faith Radio, and Tammy wrote to us from White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and she says, "Dear Dr. Bill, we have a 6-week-old baby at home, and I'm wondering what you think about having him sleep in our bed. Some of my friends say the best place for a baby to sleep is next to his mom. What do you think?" Well, Tammy, that is a great question. Advocates of the so-called family bed believe that having their baby sleep with them gives the child a sense of security and comfort that they will not get in a crib. And a lot of them argue that, well, in other cultures, parents often sleep in the same bed with their children. Now, of course, that's usually for economic reasons. That's the family bed, folks. The critics of the family bed raise concerns about parents rolling over and crushing or suffocating their baby. They also point out that the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS, may be higher in these situations because adult bedding materials may not be a safe environment for a sleeping newborn. In fact, one study out found the risk of suffocation is 20 times greater when infants are placed in adult beds rather than cribs. Now, something else to consider. Sleeping with a newborn may also cause the parent's sleep to be disrupted, not just because they cry up to be fed, but because newborns have a different sleep cycle than older children or adults. And as they pass through their different sleep phases, babies tend to move around and make all kinds of noises. They actually sound like they're waking up when they're not. They're just in a baby and infant sleep cycle. And this may interfere with mom's and dad's sleep, and that, of course, can affect their mood and their concentration and their frustration level during the day, which could, you know, negatively impact their relationship with their baby and their parenting. So, Tammy, here's what I would say. Most child development experts and most pediatricians would agree that children need to learn to fall asleep in their own crib or bed. And here's a compromise for you. Maybe a bassinet placed next to your bed during the first few months of your baby's life. That might be something where, you know, you're close by, you feel that he's safe, you know that he's there, but there's no risk to him. And also another thing you can do, you can bring your baby into bed with you in the morning after everybody's awake and just have a little snuggle time. That can be a wonderful bonding experience. And, of course, we did that with all of our kids when they were little ones. Occasionally they still want to dive into bed with us, and now they're 11, 9, and 7. So, Tammy, hopefully that's helpful. I know I'm going to hear from some of the family bed advocates saying, "What are you telling parents? You're going to permanently scar their children. They can't sleep with them from age 0 to age 25. No, no, the research would say just the opposite. So please hold your calls and your complaints, your emails. That's my opinion. If you'd like to write to us with any questions about child rearing, about marriage, about Christian worldview, we'd love to hear from you. You can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on my show page. Then there's a contact link there, and shoot me an email. So I'm sure this week I will hear from many family bed folks telling me how crazy I am. But we would love to hear from you. By the way, you can get the entire program scheduled there as well for the weekend lineup here at Faith Radio, myfaithradio.com. Well, we thank you so much for joining us. Stick with us, because coming up, my friend Van Harden, who is a radio personality and a program director of one of America's legendary radio stations, we're going to talk to Van about his new book, Life in the Purple Wedge. That's coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
One of my heroes is General Douglas MacArthur, who was one of the greatest military leaders of all times. He led the Allied armies through the darkest days of World War II and then on to victory over the Imperial Japanese Army. And then, of course, he went on to assume leadership over the Allied armies in Korea. His surprise landing of troops at Incheon was one of the most brilliant military maneuvers in the history of warfare. These accomplishments on the battlefield explain why MacArthur is revered today, more than three decades after his death. But there's another reason for my admiration of this man. It can be understood from a speech he gave in 1942 after he'd been selected for an award for being a good father. This is what he said on that day. "Nothing has touched me more deeply than the act of the National Father's Day Committee. By profession, I'm a soldier, and I take great pride in that fact. But I'm prouder, infinitely prouder, to be a father. A soldier destroys in order to build. The father only builds, never destroys. The one has the potentialities of death. The other embodies creation and life. And while the hordes of death are mighty, the battalions of life are mightier still. It is my hope that my son, when I'm gone, will remember me not from the battle, but in the home." Those were the words of a great man.
There's more Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson at MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And 877-93-FAITH is the number to call if you'd like to connect with us this hour. If you've got any questions for our guest, we always enjoy hearing from you. And, of course, as I mentioned before, if you give us your contact info, what we will do is we'll, at the end of the hour, we're going to have a drawing for, I think we have four copies of this book, Life in the Purple Wedge. And if you'd like one of them, as you hear us talk about this book, call us up, give us your name, address, phone number, email, and at the end of the hour, you might be one of the four people who win a copy of Life in the Purple Wedge. My guest this hour is Van Harden. Van is the morning show host and program director at one of America's legendary radio stations, WHO in Des Moines, Iowa. Under Van's leadership, that station has won 10 National Marconi Awards from the National Association of Broadcasters. That's a big deal. By the way, four of those awards were given to him personally as the morning show personality. Van is also an inventor. In 2004, he invented the Dayteller timepiece, and he invented, we got to ask him about this, the Van Harden cheese crust pizza. I'm getting hungry right now. Van and his wife, Denise, have three grown kids, five grandchildren. They live in his childhood home in Iowa, and he joins us today to talk about his new book, Life in the Purple Wedge. And Van, welcome to Faith Radio.
Well, Bill, it is just so good to hear your voice again. I've been a big admirer of you as a broadcaster and a man of faith for a long time, and we've had the chance to meet and talk several times, and boy, it's just great to be with you here on Faith Radio.
Well, thanks, and thanks for giving an hour of your Saturday to us. Your first book, and I have to ask you, what inspired you, first of all, to actually sit down at a computer and start writing?
I did it the old way. I did it with a paper and pencil, to tell you the truth, because I didn't know I was writing a book when I started writing it. I just sat down, and what inspired me was I have been, although everybody knows me for broadcasting, I have been an adult Bible teacher for nearly 40 years now. And I just have been so fulfilled by that. And I think anybody listening that's been a teacher will tell you, you know yourself, that nobody gets more out of that than the teacher. And so I've just learned so much, and I've been so blessed by knowing more about God, knowing more about the Bible. And so as I've been teaching all these years, I have studied every week for 3 or 4 hours because I didn't want to go in front of a class and feel like I didn't really know what I was talking about, and or at least have some reference, you know, in the Bible to what we're teaching. And that's the only thing I've ever taught. I've never had another book. I've only taught straight out of the Bible for that whole time. I figured I couldn't go wrong if I did that. So, and I would watch my class, and our classes would get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you could just see the appetite and the thirst for God and for some real truth out of the Bible. And it was wonderful to see that kind of growth. But I noticed, too, that there were some people that were very enthusiastic about the Word and about the Sunday school classes and about the churches. But I would also notice that sometimes outside of that setting, they would be very frustrated with, you know, there's so many things we go through in the world, joblessness and divorce and money and our kids and illnesses and deaths in our family, and how people were so impacted by that, almost as though they weren't Christians. Now, I wouldn't expect anybody to have any of those things happen to them and not, you know, be grieved in a certain way. But it bothered me that I was seeing so many unhappy Christians. And I thought, you know, that's really not the best witness in the world to, yeah, I'm a Christian, but you know, I got these things happening. In fact, it's a perfect opportunity to be a good witness for Christ when times are tough. So I thought, you know, I didn't teach that very well, because there are people that are having all these problems with this, even though Christians. So I thought, well, how could I teach it better? So I sat down and I put a piece of paper in front of me, and being a radio guy, I don't use illustrations very often, but I drew out this red circle, and I said, okay, that's this world. And of course, Paul and Jesus talk a lot about, quote, this world. And it's funny how they're not very positive about it. There's a lot of negative they say about this world. On the left side of the circle, I put a dot, and that is the day you were born. And on the right side of the circle, I put a dot, and that's the day that you will die. And so most people think they're making this journey through this red circle, and, you know, you're born, you had nothing to say with that about that. And then you die on the other side. Most times you don't have anything to say about that either. And you're making this journey through there, and a lot of people just kind of leave it at that. And I thought, you know, when people become Christians, it's like this whole new world comes over you. And so I illustrated that with a big blue block, and I had the blue block go over the red circle at whatever point in life you are. And so what you have is the red circle is still red on the left, but in the middle, red plus blue equals what? Purple. And so you're living in this purple wedge where you're in two worlds at the same time. And that is a very, very unique situation when you think about it. And then when you do get to the point on the right side of the red circle where you die, then you go into 100% of God's kingdom. And so that was my attempt to try to draw this out and show people how this works, and how the thing that bothered me so much was there were so many people that emotionally, after they entered the purple wedge, emotionally, they kept going back to the red circle. And my point was, hey, you've already been there. You've already been through that. Christ has already saved you from that. Sure, you're still in this world and things are going to happen, but you're going to the right side, not the left. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what it is, Bill.
You know, we see so much tension in the Christian life, and you've illustrated it very well there. Van, you read what Paul says at the end of Romans chapter 7, where, you know, the things he wants to do, he can't do. The things he doesn't want to do, he finds himself doing. And he's struggling with the old man, with the sin nature. And it's this ongoing battle. The good news is, in Romans 8:1, then he talks about the fact that, wow, we can rejoice because there's no condemnation for those of us who are in Jesus Christ. What an incredible truth. Unfortunately, as you pointed out, far too few of us live as if that truth is reality. When you look around, Van, at the people that have done it successfully, and I'm sure given the fact that, you know, given all your contacts in radio and your church as a Bible study teacher, I'm sure you've run into people that have been through major, major tragedies in life, major life crises, and yet their faith remained solid. Now, not that they didn't hurt, not that they didn't grieve. That's something that's normal and natural. That's the way God has designed us. But their faith wasn't shaken. Was there something different about those individuals that you've learned that you can say, that you can kind of put your finger on and say, okay, this seems to be the thing that inoculates Christians from, going backwards in their Christian journey when something rocks their world?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you asked that. I was just thinking about that the other day, and I think if there was one thread that I see through those people, it's that they are extremely thankful people. If you can't be thankful for what Christ has done for us, then I don't think you understand it very well. And I don't mean that to be negative. I just mean, boy, there's a wonderful world for you if you study this a little more and figure out what actually happened that Jesus Christ did for us. Not only, you know, in the very beginning, in the first part of John and in Colossians, it talks about nothing came into the world but through him. So, I mean, he created what? He created everything. He created you. He created me. And so before we even get to the story of Jesus Christ on the cross, how much do you owe him? What percentage of your life do you owe Jesus Christ? And there's only one answer to that, 100%. And then when you get to this amazing story of the crucifixion and what he did there, how can one not be thankful for that? And when you dwell on that more than you dwell on, well, my car's not running well or whatever that happens here on earth, I think those kind of people really do better. I think thankfulness is a thing to be learned, but sometimes we have to learn it the hard way, I guess.
It's interesting because the psychological research would back that up as well, Van, that people who have an attitude of gratitude, who are thankful, they tend to have better physical health, better emotional health, succeed better in relationships than those who are constantly looking at the deficit, at the glass half empty. And it's interesting because it would, when you see things, when you see biblical concepts that are backed up by research, it's, you know, God is speaking to us. His truth is revealed to us in two different ways, through his written word and through his created order. And it's always exciting to me as a Christian psychologist when I see those two things fit together, because I can then talk to even a non-Christian and say, you know, it's interesting. Here's what the research would say. And as a Christian, I can find that right here in Scripture. But thankfulness and that a grateful attitude, we're trying to teach that to our kids. And it's a struggle, I have to confess, especially in this day and age.
It really is. But, you know, once you can kind of get at that, it gives you not only license, but it makes you want to be happy and smile. And, you know, our conversation here is quite different than what my four-hour radio program's like every morning on WHO. And I'm not a different person. We just have a little different focus. But, I mean, if you think Seinfeld was a show about nothing, you ought to hear our radio program. I mean, we just have fun and hoop it up, and part of the reason that I can do that is because I'm so thankful for who I am, not because of what I've done, but what's been done for me.
Let's take a quick break here, Van. We want to chat more about this book, Life in the Purple Wedge, and again, we have four copies of it to give away if you call us right now with your contact info. We'll be back here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. Stick with us.
conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. We'd love to hear from you. In fact, if you call us in the next 30 minutes or so, we will enter you into a drawing for a copy of one of this hour's guest books, which is called Life in the Purple Wedge, Finding Yourself on the Map and How That Changes Everything. Van Harden is the author, and we're going to dive more into the book here in just a moment. But Van, first, I mentioned at the beginning of the program when I was talking about your bio that you are both a radio personality and a program director, your station, and you personally have won many awards for your work, but you're also an inventor. And that's something I did not know about you. Tell me about some of the stuff you've invented.
Well, I came up with a couple of things, but it wasn't because I thought, you know, I want to be an inventor. I want to think of something and make it. I think probably most inventions come from need. The first one, the day teller, my mother was elderly and lived in a different town than I did, but I could visit her every weekend. And she had kind of a complicated regimen of pills that she had to take. So she had one of those boxes, maybe you've seen it, where it says, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on the box, and you lift the lid, and then you take the pills out of there. And so I'd go visit her, and we'd have a fun time. And one day I noticed that she didn't take the pills out of the Thursday slot, and I didn't think too much about it. So I was the one that always filled them up to make sure she got the right things, and then I'd come back next week. And the next week I came back, well, Tuesdays was still in there and Fridays was still in there. And so I said, Mom, how come you're not taking these pills? These are really important for you. And she said, well, I hate to admit this, but in this retirement lifestyle where everything's the same every day, some days I don't know what day it is. Mm. And I thought, oh, gee, well, I better fix that. So I thought, well, I'll just get some kind of calendar that's got a great big flips over every day and tells the name of the day in big print. And I couldn't find anything. And so I thought, well, there must be a clock that has that. So I examined all the clocks, and a lot of clocks had little teeny abbreviations like a TUE or something. But I told my friend, I was so frustrated by this. I said, I feel like I want to sit down and just draw out and invent what I want. And he said, oh, you got to do it. And I said, well, I can do it. I'm running a couple of radio stations. I got a radio program. I don't have time. He said, well, right now I have time, and I'll help you do it. I said, wow. So long story short, we found a clock company that just was very excited about the concept of having a clock that had the name of the day in great big letters, so that was immediately the first thing you saw. And so we had it manufactured and put it on the market, and it's still available on my website, vanharden.com. But we started getting emails from all over the country from people saying, oh, this is the best thing that's ever happened to our family, and our mom is rejuvenated now. And I thought, you know, this is not rocket science. All it is the name of the day printed out in big letters. But apparently other people had the same need that we did. And so we found that out. So I was happy. And then people started calling me an inventor, and I didn't even really think that much about it.
How exciting, though, to meet a need like that. And obviously, not only are we talking about elderly people, but there are people that have different memory issues where they maybe have short-term memory problems because of some type of disorder. And they have that, you know, right every morning, stares them right in the face. They know what day of the week it is, so they don't miss an important appointment, so they don't take their medication. Well, kudos to you for meeting an important need. Now, you also...
Well, thanks. I thought it was because my mother was old, and then I was in the hospital for a month one time, and son of a gun, if I didn't lay there saying, what day is this?
Well, it's true. Yeah, when you're in a setting where nothing changes, if you're not in the workaday world Monday through Friday, it's easy to lose track of the day.
Yeah.
Now, I also mentioned at the beginning of the show that you invented a special type of pizza. Let's dive into that. I'd love to have some right now, but I...
Well, that same hospital stay that I had for about a month, I had a terrible lawn mowing accident where I almost lost my foot. I came out okay of that, but I had three surgeries, and they put me into one of those tubes, those oxygen tubes, hyperbaric chamber, I think it's called. And I remember when they came and told me, hey, we're going to put you in there because, you know, you'll breathe 100% oxygen and we think that will heal your wound faster. And I said, wait a minute, isn't that that thing that Michael Jackson gets into? And they said, yeah. I said, well, I'm not sure I like how it turned out for him, but, you know, if you guys say that's what I should do, then I'll do it. So anyway, when this was all over, they saved my foot and I went home and I found out right away my appetite had changed. I couldn't stand bread. And that was weird because my favorite food was pizza and burgers and sandwiches. And it just smelled foul to me, no matter how new it was. And I asked my doctor, what happened to me? And he said, well, I don't know, but this happens from time to time. It could have been because of, you know, your surgeries, or it could have been because you went through that hyperbaric chamber every day. And he said, I don't know. And so I thought, okay, I just quit eating bread and I lost 70 pounds, 70, wow. 70. And so I thought the only thing I really, really miss is pizza. And so I got to thinking, and I'm not a chef by any means, but I got to thinking there's got to be a way to make pizza and the crust out of something besides bread. So I went into the kitchen, and I'll tell you, for weeks I was out there trying to make pizza crust out of something besides bread, and I burned up pans, and I set off smoke alarms, and it was ugly. But I finally pulled out one that I had concocted, a cheese concoction, and I pulled it out, and I set it on top of the stove, and I looked at it, and I thought, man, that even looks like bread. And so we let it cool down, and we put the toppings on it. My wife said, wow, I like this better than regular pizza. And so it was 100% cheese crust. And I know that sounds very, very rich, and it is rich, except that it's got like one-third the carbs because there's no bread in it. And what I found out that I didn't even know, I was helping some other people, the celiac disease people and the people that have to eat gluten-free. It had no gluten in it, and I wish I was smart enough to say, yeah, I knew that. That's why I made this, but it just turned out that way. And so, anyway, out came this pizza, and the local grocery chain heard about it, and they had me come to their office and make it for them, and they said, we've never seen anything like this. So, anyway, they started making it in their own deli section, and then had calls from three national pizza producers. They all wanted to know about it, and I did a deal with one of them, and so they started making it in a frozen format, and it never has gone past the Hy-Vee market, which is, I don't know, they're like nine states, but I mean, it never did make it to California or New York or anywhere like that.
But can we order it online?
You know, not anymore, but it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think it was the Safeway chain that called me and wanted me to come to California. And so I did. I went out there and I took it, and they were very impressed. And the mistake I made was when I went to go back home and I went to the airport, I still had the pizza cutter and a knife in my luggage.
Oh, no.
And the guy at the X-ray saw that. Of course, he didn't like that. He says, you stand over here. And some other people came to get me, so they made me put all this stuff out on the table, and they said, what is all of this? And I told them the story of the cheese crust pizza, and I said, I should have left that stuff, thrown it away. I just forgot and threw it in the suitcase. And he says, well, now tell me more about this pizza. Where can I get it? Where can I get it? And I said, well, you know, if Safeway decides they want it, then you can get it. But that's why I'm here, to see if they do.
So the TSA loved your pizza, even though you broke all the security rules in the book. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's what got me through.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, let's dive into your book here, Life in the Purple Wedge. And we talked earlier about this little red circle that's our life. And if you can imagine a red circle with a little black dot on one side and a little black dot on the other side, and you're traveling through this world, Paul talks about the world. And we're not talking about the world that we see around us, you know, God's creation and nature. That's a good thing. The world would be the cares of the world, or the sin of the world. The moral aspects of the world that all of us have to deal with from birth to death, And Paul says we're really citizens of you know, we're citizens of heaven. We have our true citizenship there, but for now we're in this this red circle.
Yeah.
So how do we get through the red circle effectively, Van?
Well, a lot of people just assume, there are people that assume that they're in the red circle until they die and then they go to heaven. And that's where the handoff is made, you know, and that's why I tried to, that's what the purple is all about, that you are living, you're in God's kingdom. I mean, something changed big time when Christ calls you into his kingdom. That's not nothing. That's huge. That's the biggest thing that ever happens in your life. Are you still living in this world? Absolutely. And a lot of it has to do, I think, as far as your question is, how do you make it through? A lot of it is what you dwell upon. Now, you think about it. Let's say that you go to a good Bible-teaching, Bible-believing church, and let's say that you go for Sunday school and church on Sunday morning. So there's 2 hours of your week, and maybe you go on Wednesday night, and there's another hour. That's fine. So you got, if you do that, and your church is a Bible-believing church, you got 3 hours out of how many hours does a person have in a week? I can't even figure it out here in my mind. But the rest of that time, you are being bombarded by the world. And it's no wonder we get so upset and screwed up, because the ratio is out of whack. I mean, that's why you have to really understand what God has done for us to overwhelm those other things. And sometimes, you know, I've met people that were dying, and yet they were so, they were smiling and they were okay with that, you know, and those were some of those thankful people. And let me tell you one story. Have I got time here? Should I wait?
No, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Before I had written this book, I had the concept in my mind, and I had a friend in the hospital who had cancer, and he knew he was going to die soon, and we all knew he was going to die soon. And so I went over to visit him, and I was talking with him, and we talked about the normal little things that people talk about. And then he started talking about spiritual things. And it was a little bit reminiscent of the purple wedge. And so I leaned over, and out of his wastebasket, I got a piece of paper and I got a pen, and I drew out the map that you and I have been talking about here. And I said, "You mean like this?" And he looked at me, he looked at that map, and he looked at me, and he had the biggest smile on his face I'd ever seen. But yet tears were pouring out of his eyes. Mm. And he said, "That is exactly what I needed to see today to help me put this all into perspective." Because you had it right, Bill. You said the little red circle. That circle, it seems like everything to us now, because this is the only place we've ever lived. But it's really very little. And then when you get into that big blue kingdom, you know, that's why the subtitle of the book is Finding Yourself on the Map and How That Changes Everything. So that's how you put it into perspective.
That blue square that we're talking about in Van's illustration is the kingdom of God. And as he pointed out, we enter that kingdom when we accept Jesus Christ as our personal Savior, and the Holy Spirit comes to dwell inside us. And yet we still have to live in that little red circle. We're going to get into some of more of the concepts that Van has in this book here in just a moment, but I want to give you the phone number if you'd like to enter our drawing for a copy. We've got 4 copies to give away at the end of the hour. If you call us at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH, and give us your name, address, phone number, and email at the end of the hour, we've got some copies to give away. Well, it's 11:45. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Thanks so much for joining us today, whether you are listening to us in Madison, Wisconsin, Duluth, maybe you've tuned in Fargo-Moorhead or Sioux Falls, Waterloo, or right here in the Twin Cities on Faith 900. Thanks for making us part of your weekend. We'll be back with more with Van Harden after this quick break.
Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
Something is stirring in the Muslim world. Thousands of men and women are trusting in Christ. Susie Larson here, and on the next Live the Promise, I'm excited to welcome Dr. David Garrison, Global Strategist for the International Mission Board. David will share what he's been seeing during his travels and how the Holy Spirit is working to bring Muslims to Christ.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays from 3 to 4 on Faith Radio.
There's no shortage of messages in your life. Phone calls, text messages, face-to-face requests.
Mom.
But in the midst of your daily communication overload, find messages that build your faith and encourage your walk with God. Compelling stories, insightful podcasts, and ways to get involved. Get the latest from Faith Radio in your Facebook newsfeed when you join us on our Facebook page. Just search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com to join us today.
One day, your home will be filled with glorious music lifting your spirits to new heights. That day begins with this day, the day you register for the University of Northwestern Academy of Music. Classes are for all ages and abilities, taught in a Christian setting by Northwestern students and faculty. Solo, individual, and select group lessons are available, as well as our vibrant youth choir, unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Your life. On purpose.
Now back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. Thank you for spending your part of your weekend with us here on Faith Radio. If you want to get the entire weekend scheduled, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on Saturday or Sunday. You can find out what other programs we have coming up. My friend Neil Stavem with his re-air of one of his best connecting faith stories and shows is coming up right after this program, so stick around for that. My guest this hour is Van Harden. Van is the morning personality and program director of WHO Radio, WHO Radio in Des Moines, Iowa, which is one of America's legendary radio stations. And we should point out that there's a pretty famous individual that once worked on the air at WHO. Van, other than you, of course, tell us who that was.
Well, there was a young man that came in one time, and he was, this is many years ago, but he was very creative. He had this stupendous voice, and his ad-lib ability was just unbelievable. In fact, many of us still listen to things he did many, many years ago to try to learn from him. But his name was Ronald Reagan. Mm. And he, he came back when there was it was either 50th or 75th anniversary of WHO Radio, and he gave a speech, and he tells some funny, funny stories about when he was on the air there and things that happened, and he tells the story about when he was broadcasting the Cubs baseball game, and you weren't at the game, you were in a room, and there was a ticker tape, and they'd give it to you, and you had to read the code about what happened and how the ticker tape broke, and so how he had a guy fouling off a ball 13 times before the ticker tape got fixed. And he found out that the guy had flied out on the first pitch.
Oh, no. It's amazing. When I visited your studios there and saw that picture of Ronald Reagan, it brought back such wonderful memories of him, both, of course, as our president and an actor and the governor of California, where I lived when I was younger, and just so neat to have that legacy of that wonderful radio station. And by the way, tell our listeners here in the Minneapolis area or in our other markets about the coverage of WHO, because it's quite an amazing radio station.
Yeah, well, and I know there's a big one in Minneapolis there, too, because I got offered a job there one time. God didn't leave me to go, but our station in Des Moines here, WHO, is on 1040 AM. It's 50,000 watts, day and night, clear channel, which means there are no other stations on that frequency that are anywhere near us. And so we have had phone calls literally from every single state, and I mean all of them, even Alaska and Hawaii. And it's almost like being on a network, you know, when you're on there. And there are a lot of snowbirds that go down to Texas and Florida and Arizona. And it's funny how they all get to listen during the morning show, too, you know, just to see what's going on back home. But it's a real, real honor to work there. Most of us that are on the air are from Iowa and grew up either listening to WHO or having to listen to it because our parents did. And to this day, I have people come up to me and say, well, I never thought I'd say this, but I have turned into my mother listening to WHO radio.
Love it. Love it. Well, let's dive back into your book. Again, the book is called Life in the Purple Wedge, Finding Yourself on the Map and How That Changes Everything. You have a chapter called The Dilemma of the Purple Wedge, and it's got a great illustration of the little wedge guy, and he's kind of looking a little confused. And you say people who've become Christians and therefore live in that purple wedge sometimes feel frustrated, not only with this world, but also with themselves. Why is that, Van?
Well, a lot of times people are so excited about entering God's kingdom and the purple wedge that they think everything's just going to be rosy from then on out. Well, kingdom-wise, that's right. But world-wise, this world right-wise, it isn't. In fact, I found out that sometimes they may even get a little worse because you got an enemy that really wants to pick on you now. But it's something that you have to put into perspective. And that's that if you can just imagine that map in your head with the red on the left, think about all you've been through. And you've been through a lot, and now you're in the middle in this purple wedge, and you're still having to go through that, but you've got something you never had before. You've got Jesus Christ, and you've got God. And so that really changes the perspective of everything. Plus, you know that in who knows when, 30, 40, 50 years, you're not even going to be in the red circle at all. You're going to be entirely in the blue kingdom. And one of the things that was frustrating in writing the book was the blue kingdom that I drew on there is eternal, up, down, and to the right. And a page in a book is only so big, you know. And so in the very, I think it's the very last page of the book, I tried to put it a little more in perspective and drew the whole map, but there's just a little teeny red dot over on the left. And, you know, eternity, that's a long time. And to share the joy of being with God, I wrote a chapter about this, too, about heaven, about what's that going to be like. And everybody seems to think that heaven will be like the best thing they ever experienced on earth, whether that's a romance or, you know, a place they love. Everything I read, being in the actual presence of God is going to blow that out of the water and really be so much better even than that.
Now, you did point out a minute ago that we have an enemy, and he's called the ruler of this world. God has given Satan a limited amount of power in this world. And it's interesting. You say here in this next chapter, The Joy of the Purple Wedge, you say, while dilemmas are many for those living in the purple wedge, joys are far more. Worldly red circle problems, challenges, cares, and worries may hammer and pound you day and night. That's not unusual. That's part of the enemy's plan as the ruler of this world. His goal is to keep your heart and mind off God and his kingdom. And you say, Van, we seem to fall for that daily without realizing it or thinking about it. And, man, oh, man, I don't think a lot of us, there's in recent years, and maybe I'm wrong here, maybe there are certain denominations that focus a lot on spiritual warfare, but I think the average evangelical doesn't give it a second thought, and maybe that's because we are so caught up with the cares of this world. And I think Satan uses that. I think, you know, he realizes that we're kind of clueless about the fact that there's a spiritual realm and that there's demonic activity, and that while he can't possess us, he can oppress us. And so we need to be covering ourselves with that spiritual armor, don't we?
Well, that's absolutely right. And the other side of that story that you just told, he will try to depress you and defeat you and get you down and all of that. But the other thing is that apparently whatever you're going through apparently went through the fingers of God's hand, and he allowed it to happen. And I just believe from all the study I've done that God doesn't allow anything that doesn't give the opportunity to glorify him. And that's what I think when I think of the cross and Satan looking at Jesus up on the cross laughing, saying, ha, ha, ha. And then what happened just totally blew that out of the water. And I think that's what I think back at some things that happened to me that I didn't know if I'd ever going to get out of or not. And they turned out to be huge blessings, although I wouldn't want to go through them again. But God will use those things just like Satan tries to use them.
Hmm. Van, we just got about 2 minutes left. If you would speak to the person who's going through it right now, who doesn't really see hope on the other side, give them some encouragement.
Yeah, well, it is tough. I mean, while I was writing this book, I got a phone call that just tore me up. And I thought, how can I go on writing this? And then I thought, hey, Van, are you going to believe the words of the Bible and what you're writing about or not? And I went ahead and finished up what I was doing. And that is one of those things that turned around totally and turned into a big blessing. And you just have to keep things in perspective. That's what this book is all about. It's all about perspective. It doesn't make your troubles go away. It doesn't, let you win the lottery. It just lets you understand where you are, where you were, and where you're going. And I'll tell you, there is such great comfort in being a person who knows where you came from, where you are, and where you're going, that has just meant a lot to me. And I, you know, Bill, when I wrote this, I put my hand on the book and I said, dear God, I don't know if anybody's going to read this. Please just let my wife and my kids read it. If that's all that happens, that'd be great. But this thing, it's now in its second printing. The other day I had three churches in town went together and asked me to do a special service on a Sunday morning and preach the sermon two times, and we had 1,800 people there. I had a guy call me the other day. He's works at a secular equipment company, and he said, I got 400 employees. I want one copy of the book for each one of my employees. I'm putting it in their newsletter this month. So, you know, it just, you never know when things like this happen how they're going to be used.
Well, we would encourage you to pick up this book. You can order it at Van's website, vanharden.com. It's H-A-R-D-E-N. Again, vanharden.com. The book is called Life in the Purple Wedge, Finding Yourself on the Map and How That Changes Everything. Van, thanks so much for your time today. May God continue to bless you in your efforts in both your work at WHO and your speaking and your teaching.
Well, Bill, you're a good friend. Thank you for what you're doing. You've certainly answered God's call, and that's a high honor.
Van Harden, our guest here on Faith Radio. You have yourself a wonderful weekend. Neil Stabenow's up next.